Off the Ball. GAA.
I think as well, the big thing with obviously trying to stop David Clifford is you have to try and stop the source, and the big source of that is obviously Paddy.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome along. It is Thursday's Off the Ball. It is Will with you between now and 10 p.m. All-Ireland football final. Oof. Excitement in earnest out of Mayo against Kerry. A repeat of the final of 2006, and Kerry will be hoping to follow in the footsteps of that team who went back-to-back 06 and 07. Jack O'Connor's side, the defending champions, going into Sunday's final against a Mayo team who still carry, I think, some of the scarring of their recent final defeats, but in the white that they wore in 1951, they'll be hoping to lift Sam Maguire for the first time since that year. Carol Kane is going to be with us just after 8 o'clock to look at some of the big matchups in the game, and we'll hear from former Kerry midfielder David Moran and former Mayo goalkeeper David Clark ahead of the big game this Sunday. Also, we've got the Camogie semi-finals at Semple Stadium this coming Saturday. Galway, the league champions, the reigning All-Ireland champions, up against Kilkenny in the first of two games. And then Cork, who've got a bit of a new look this year, take on their neighbours Tipperary in the second one. Sarah Donovan, Rachel Sheehan will be with us to look ahead to that one, and we'll hear from the camps ahead of it as well. And Carl Dennehy is going to be with us in a little while. The National Championships has got that little bit of extra spice this coming Saturday and Sunday, particularly with Rashida Adeleke, who's had this injury hit season, is hoping to punch her ticket for the Europeans in Birmingham in a few weeks' time. It is our last chance to put a qualifying time for the 200 metres in place. We do expect she'll be on the relay team, but it has been a bit of a disappointing 2026 so far. I'd say on the News Round, we have got Ben Symes. How are you, Ben?
Suppose I'm all right, Will, yeah? How are you?
Look, I'm bringing the energy, Eve. Eve Conway's here as well. How are you, Eve?
I'm all good.
See, Ben is in his natural flow state at the moment. League of Ireland teams are doing reasonably well in Europe by comparison to the SPL teams who are not doing all that well. You know, Bowes had a really good result last night. I thought you would be coming in here off the excitement of watching that second Bowes goal, particularly against Balcani last night.
You're a journalist, like, you get excited at the time because it's a big result for an Irish side in Europe, and then you have to switch on to your job. Like, you have to go down and grill Alan Reynolds, who was actually not very happy, but that's for reasons outside of the match. He was given out. He was at Altogether Now with us last year.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get invited back. For this
Is that
year.
Why?
Yeah. So
he was very annoyed at the League of Ireland launch earlier this year that we didn't know that he had a junior Gaelic football medal as well.
That was at me as well. So he was made no mistake in letting me know that I've annoyed him one too many times. But no, it was all in jest. Bowes have a game that weekend. That's why we didn't invite Alan Reynolds down. He was there last year, of course, Waterford native. But yeah, it was not. I took home. But Bowes are actually brilliant. Bowes always give you. I'm not a Bowes fan. Bowes are good, very good when you're working there as a journalist. Like, they always give you a match day program. So I took the program home and I took the team sheet home. And suddenly you get home, you kind of realise it's a bit of history. Like, it's the last ever European game at Dalymount Park. I was looking through some of the results. Aidan Fitzmaurice had a brilliant piece in the Indo going through 10 historic games that were there. And you're looking at some of the names, like Henrik Larsson scored for Helsingborgs there in the mid-90s against Drogheda United, and Drogheda United had that spell in the mid-90s when they turned professional for a brief spell. Zinedine Zidane played there twice in the 90s.
Bordeaux?
With Bordeaux, yeah. He's only a kid the first time in 1993. Franz Beckenbauer, I played there. That was Shamrock Rovers, though, I believe. Because obviously, like, it's such a... This place is historic. Like, every team would have played their European games there. And it's bizarre when you're looking at the attendances from those games and all of a sudden you're down to sold out 3,500 yesterday because of the limitations due to the terraces.
But look at the pictures of the days of yore, Ben. You see, health and safety was not a concern for many at Dalymount Park. I remember we spoke to John Giles about the Russia game particularly because we had the anniversary came around, I think it was 2 years ago. And like he said, they could literally look up and there were people just like standing on top of the stand.
I know. And sometimes you're like, you see that stand behind the goal at Dalymount and you're like, God, yeah, it's going to be brilliant, obviously, when they redevelop it. And it's going to be a really nice stadium. But you see that and you're just like, God, what you'd love to do to see that open one more time. But the place was a really good atmosphere in there last night. Like, I was chatting to Stephen Doyle earlier, who is our own resident Bulls fan. Who
the man has also put his voice on the soundtrack of that Tierney goal.
He has. So his, I was joking saying his name's in the history books as well as Ross Tierney. But he was saying you could not have scripted that if you were to be a Bulls fan, that you would come from behind, 90th minute winner, and it's a fella who came through Bohemians Football Club, a Ballymun man who came to the club that scored the winner. And what a winner it was, like, unbelievable. And as you said, I think, like, how much of a difference does commentary make to goals that you see? Because I saw that, I was in the stadium and watched that, and I thought, oh God, yeah, that's good. And then I watched it back, and Steve's commentary, I was like, oh, it could be even better than I thought it was.
It enhanced it, let's be honest. If the commentary is good and the commentary is excited, it makes the goal probably 10% better.
It was, and I mean, I was here in the office last night as the game was going on, and you know, you have streams, you're a little bit behind or whatever, and I could just hear some Bose fans in the office like just jump up and down with excitement when that goal went in. And then over the next 2 hours subsequently, I heard it 7 or 8 times again and again, rewatching it, as you said, with the commentary. Just it sort of builds onto this lovely narrative that developed last night. I think the way, although in an ideal world, probably Bose wouldn't have wanted to concede early on, but the magic of a last-minute winner after having been behind, maybe against the run of play, it all added up to quite a magical evening for Bose.
It did. We were chatting to Shane Coleman, just to come off the hurt shoulder, as we were about to come into studio before the show, and he said, the one thing we shouldn't be doing is sleeping on the first goal, which is a pretty good goal too.
Ah, oh, brilliant. Yeah, really, really good. A quick move, Dawson the boy. I was just looking there today, Hibernians lost in the second round of the Conference League today. Hibernians of Scotland, obviously in Edinburgh, lost to Malishiva, also from Kosovo, lost 2-0 today. Malishiva only finished 1 point ahead of Balkany in the league last year. Like, this is a serious outfit that Bose beat, who got knocked out by Shamrock Rovers last year in the Conference League qualifying. You just said something there about last minute goals. And it's so bad that, like, my mind immediately goes back to the Hungary game in Troy's goal. I started fantasy football today, and I was trying to think of a name, and I was like, can I do a play? Something, thinking, like, the Odyssey is out. Could you do a play on Troy and somewhere in that? But I was thinking of, like, where I was for that goal, and I had the commentary on. I was in the airport in Krakow, and I watched the first half on my phone in what, like, a brilliant old rundown Eastern European pub that didn't have any TVs, and I was watching it on my phone down in, it's Kazimierz, is the old Jewish district of Krakow. It's a really lovely area, and I was watching it on the phone, then got on the train, and Hungary score their second, and I'm in the airport trudging through the airport like, oh my God, this is it, this ends here, I'm never going to get a playoff, never going to get a World Cup, and we're never going to get a World Cup or a playoff, and then get through security, and they have you lumped in with the where British people are flying for their flight, so you're going through, and they made us all wait, they made us queue with the British people, and even though you had a European passport, and we got through, and there was 4 gates. It was one flight to Birmingham, one flight to London, one flight to Dublin, and the other one didn't have a flight going out of it. So this is just full of English people. There was, like, no Irish people here, and we were watching it in there on the player, and the goal goes in with, like, 10 minutes to go. Unbelievable goal as well, but you just think, oh, come on, we're going to get it. And then,
did the player hold up?
The player held up. Oof. And when the ball is lumped in by Kelleher, is probably,
it's not lumped in, it was delicate,
sorry, you know what I mean. Yeah. That's the last bit of Darren Maloney's commentary that I can remember. I don't remember the I couldn't even say. I fully, as soon as you put the ball in, I, like, stood up.
It was mainly a scream, which is what I enjoyed. It was actually the visceral energy of when the ball went in the net.
Yeah, and Parra gets his foot on it, and because you're watching on a phone, you can't fully see what's going on. And I was kind of like, for a split second, it was like the, you know, that moment just before a goal, like, that's my favourite moment. It's my favourite moment in the ground when something has been hit, a ball's been hit from this, like that Tierney goal. Is that split second, and split second, I remember just standing up and then realising, going mental, roaring, screaming, and there's, like, 3 full flights of English people right in front of me looking at me like I've got 10 heads. And then there's glass separating me from the rest of the flights behind, like, going all over the rest of Europe. And a guy starts banging on the glass behind me, and I I mean, instantly brought a little back down to earth, thinking, oh, this must be police. I turn around, it's an Irish guy. He's got an Irish shirt on, flying to somewhere else in Europe. And he starts banging on the glass, and the two of us are banging on the glass. And then I turn around, and you kind of calm yourself down after a couple minutes. I remember there was this Polish woman there, and she says, you have to tell us what's happened. Like, no one even knew this match was on. No one knew. Out of these hundreds of people, English people, no one knew the match was on. And the Polish woman goes, she goes, oh, you have to tell us what's happened. And I couldn't even speak. I was like, Ireland scored. I was like, couldn't even say we're going to a World Cup. I was like, Ireland scored, and we might be going to the World Cup. We're going to get a playoff. And she goes, oh, I thought you had some really big personal news happened. And I was like, it's better. It's better personal news.
A World Cup playoff is more important than the first child or getting married.
Yeah. I will never, moral of the story, I cannot remember Darren Maloney's commentary because I didn't hear it, that the English people after, who then obviously found out that this match was happening, were posting all over saying, what brilliant commentary, what a moment. Well, I can tell you, when it was on, the English people wanted absolutely nothing to do with it.
I love the comms, because it was a case of just basically Ronnie and Dara were just fans for a moment.
They
lost the fact that they were professionally at a game. It was just literally, wow, the goal has happened, and we just didn't expect it. The other thing is, Eve is a lover of classics and classical literature. You would have pointed out, if he tried to use that Troy pun there, you'd have been like, yeah, but Troy is far more relevant to the Iliad than the Odyssey.
Oh, that was very nice. Mm. Yeah. I mean, well, Christopher Nolan's new.
You didn't go there. So
Is there a recent film called The Iliad?
No, it was called Troy, and it was terrible.
It was Troy's in 2004.
Yeah,
wasn't that bad.
Recent enough, not.
It wasn't great.
That's pretty bad.
Wasn't great.
What's his name? I loved.
I'm pretty sure Peter O'Toole apologized for the whole film.
Played Odysseus.
Sean Bean.
Sean Bean.
The only movie where Sean Bean doesn't die. Sorry, spoilers.
And he's about 1,000 years old.
Make it 8,000.
Yeah, he keeps his Yorkshire accent, which is brilliant. And there's like, when they come to find him, and the soldiers come to find him, they're like, we're looking for Odysseus. And he goes, oh yeah, I can't remember what word he used, but he goes, oh, that fella. And you're just like, this is brilliant. Like, no, not told him to do anything.
But don't worry, Matt Damon is full on Boston.
I haven't seen it yet.
The Odyssey as well. Yeah. We won't spoil it. We were giving out earlier on about spoilers when even I were talking about it. That's going to break it to you.
I think it's been long enough.
It has. Right, okay, let's talk about the Conference League qualifying, which is coming up tonight then. So, second round continues. You've got two Irish teams in action?
We do. So, Derry City are away to Croatian side Rijeka, having dropped down from the Europa League qualifiers after losing to Cska Sofia last week. Tiernan Lynch's side lost 5-3 on aggregate to the Bulgarian team and ended up with a €20,000 fine and suspended partial stadium closure. This came after the match at the Brandywell had to be paused for 15 minutes when travelling fans attempted to get onto the home section, causing some Derry fans to spill onto the pitch. Today's opponents are still in pre-season. They haven't played a competitive fixture since May, while Derry City's latest match was a 3-0 cup win over Toka Rovers. And then elsewhere, Shelburne got a bye directly into the second qualifying round. They take on Estonian side Kalju at Tulke Park. This is head coach John Russell's first home game for Shelburne, and they need to bounce back after a disappointing cup exit against Kerry on penalties over the weekend. Speaking today, Keith Tracy believes that if they can tidy up their defence, Shelburne and John Russell should get a result this evening.
I don't think they can be as bad as they were against Kerry. I think John will know that the reason they were beaten against Kerry was ultimately the penalties, but it was the individual mistakes within the game. You can't really tactically allow for that, so I think against Kalju, Shelburne will be looking, thinking Kalju only just limp past Limfield from up the north. I think if they're defensively a little bit more solid, I think if they eradicate the individual errors and they're a little bit more ruthless at the top end of the park, I think there's every chance they could get a result.
All right, Keith Tracy there. Keith's also going to feature on the League of Ireland pod, which should be in your podcast feeds around about now. Obviously, look, we've got the two teams in action tonight, Ben. For Shells particularly, this is an interesting one, because obviously the weekend, very disappointing defeat against Kerry the first time they played against them. And now, obviously, John Russell and his management team need to try and get a bounce out of them tonight.
John Russell just loves playing Kerry. Infamously, Kerry turned around and beat Sligo Rovers last year in the FAI Cup as well, also under John Russell. And they lost, obviously, again last week on penalties. Those who are listening, that is the same Rijeka who beat Shelburne last year in the Europa League qualifiers, and they dropped down. Shells had a pretty famous win, beat Rijeka out there. They were the Croatian champions at the time. And then they turn out, I think Mipo Rebeko must have scored in about the 87th or 88th minute. And Rijeka went and scored again in Tulke in the very last minute to win that game. But for Shells, this is like a tantalising prospect. Like, they know if they can beat Nom Kalju, they face either Vojvodina from Serbia or more than likely Ajax. And to get to travel to the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam, which is 52,000 seater stadium, to get to invite Ajax over to Selhurst Park, which they can do as well. Bowles have to move out of Daily Mount last year. Shale's got a dispensation to stay at Talca Park.
Obviously, be for all the qualifiers. Potentially going to the Aviva for Ajax.
We were having this debate earlier. Are Ajax a yes, they're a huge draw, but are they big enough to move a game to the Aviva? Like, I was making the argument of, and it was like no one else was making any other argument that, like, if this was like Everton, you'd be more likely to move to the Aviva. That, unfortunately, that's just how it goes. Like, would Ajax really put like 30,000 bums on seats in the Aviva? I don't know if they would.
I don't think
they would. Now, obviously, that's taking nothing away. Like, it is a glamour draw. It's a huge glamour draw. Same way, if Bowes can get by Balkany, they'll face either Midtjylland or Besiktas, and you could have Mo Salah there. Yeah. Also pretty glamorous.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We talked about Bowes a little bit, but we heard from Alan Reynolds as well, Liv.
We did. So as we were saying earlier, a 90th minute winner from Ross Tierney yesterday saw Bowes complete a dramatic comeback to beat Balkany. Alan Reynolds' side had been a goal down via a first half penalty from the visitors. But as we said, Douglas James Taylor equalised with 15 minutes remaining before Ross Tierney's late strike ensured that Bowes will lead 2-1 heading to Kosovo next week. Boss Alan Reynolds, speaking after the match to Ben, spoke about how they're approaching European fixtures this year.
I think the challenge is, and what people struggle with is, League of Ireland is crash, bang, wallop, and you get after each other and all that. This one is tactical and it's different. And the crowd are looking and going, what's going on here? They want the normal. But I felt after half an hour they scored, they sat back and said, right, we'll take this, got tired, and we went through the gears. And I thought we were really strong and we finished really strong, as I said. And I think we deserved that at the end, but we had to work hard for it.
Did you get a sense throughout the game that they were trying to frustrate the side? There was a couple of little niggly fouls and stuff throughout it as well.
Yeah, I would have thought so. But look, I mean, that's parcel of it. I'm sure there'll be plenty of that over in Kosovo next week, you know, but it's halftime.
There you go. Alan Reynolds setting up very nicely for next week. Now, Alejandro Garnacho on the move again. It's been completed today.
He is. So he has completed a season-long loan from Chelsea to Aston Villa. Garnacho joined Chelsea from Man United last summer and scored 8 goals in 43 appearances during his time at Stamford Bridge. However, he had not been involved in pre-season training under new Chelsea boss Xabi Alonso. Garnacho's signing follows the departure of Morgan Rodgers from Villa, who went to Chelsea for a record £117 million on Tuesday.
Yeah, there's a lot of financial fair play in all this, or PSR as they would call it now, because the Garnacho transfer doesn't become mandatory until he meets conditions. So therefore, it falls outside of the PSR rules for this year for Aston Villa. Well, obviously, Chelsea have put through the money for Morgan Rodgers, so you can see how this deal would be attractive for Villa. Am I alone in thinking that this could end up like last year, where Villa get to a point and say, we're just not going to play you?
I wouldn't be surprised, because I think that this is an insane move.
There's ten league games to manage.
I don't know why you would buy this guy. And I can remember when he moved to Chelsea, there were people saying that they thought Chelsea had gotten a steal at the price they got him at. I don't want to say I've never gotten the allure of Garnacho, like when he was in those opening 20 games for Man United. I did think he was going to be guy, but we've seen now about stuff off the pitch and on the pitch that, like, I can't understand it. I can't really get my head around it. And if he's going to be the direct Morgan Rodgers replacement, completely different style of player as well, I don't understand this at all. And I probably agree with you. If they were to turn around at the end of the season and do exactly what they did with Jadon Sancho, what Barcelona are going to do with Marcus Rashford, wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
Emery does love a high profile loan signing, so
Aston Villa love that, don't they?
They do. Oh,
where's Mick McCarthy when you need him to explain to us why they always do this? Like, what I hope he's for PSR, but
part of it, but I'd say they're also probably half hoping to strike gold.
But like, they end up, like, the Asensio one kind of did for a while, and then they went, nah, we're not going to buy him anyway. So, like, I don't know. Really, I really... was Daniel Malin on loan as well? Or did he go out on loan the other way?
No, he went out on loan then.
It's obviously, like, I presume it's PSR purposes, but...
Well, that seems to be Villa's kind of thing for the last few seasons. They always seem to be involved in some sort of struggle in terms of meeting some of these targets or being within these rules. And they're so wishy-washy sometimes. It all just feels a bit kind of, well, we're going to have this slight trade and we'll see how this works out and blah, blah, blah. And for fans, it must be frustrating.
Yeah, I don't understand the ins and outs of this entirely. We'd probably have to get like Arsblog or someone on who follows this very intently to be able to talk about like the money side to it, someone who really follows it closely. But I was reading during the week that basically there's like a 45-day window inside the assessment as well. So if you want a move that's a loan move, you want it to happen after July the 1st. And so therefore, whatever Villa are putting in on Garnacho falls outside of that. So apparently this was very tempting. And obviously some of this offsets the Morgan Rodgers money if you're Chelsea, if this ends up being a sale at 45 million or whatever it's being viewed as. So it's two sides who want to get around PSR, both conspiring together in a player trade, essentially.
PSR, can I say, PSR reminds me, and I'm aware that I'm bringing it up again, PSR just reminds me of like VAR chat.
Yeah.
It's like the same, just like,
endlessly frustrating.
This is just like, don't eat it. Yeah. Get rid of it.
Fair enough.
Don't want to talk about it
I'm
anymore.
I'm just trying to keep the listeners informed.
Don't want to hear about it anymore.
In a slightly uninformed way.
Bring me back exactly the football when they used to have 35,000 in Daily Mail Park. And there was no such thing as PSR and VAR.
There you go. Ben
old man Yazakla
yearns for a time before he was born. Two French stories back to back here. So Saliba's injury, Eve, and also Zidane is about to take over France.
Yeah, so it was confirmed late last night, Arsenal confirmed it, that William Saliba returned from the World Cup with a back injury and will be out of action for an extended period of time. He was, of course, part of the France side that made it to the semi-finals of this summer's tournament. He will require a period of rehabilitation, but is not expected to need surgery. And then I suppose in better news for the French, Zinedine Zidane is expected to be named as the next head coach of France next week. The former Real Madrid boss is in line to replace Didier Deschamps, who stepped down after their semi-final exit. Deschamps led France to the World Cup success as a manager in 2018 and as a captain in 1998. This will be Zidane's first managerial gig since leaving Real Madrid in 2021. And I do appreciate that we're going from Didier Deschamps to Zinedine Zidane. A lovely bit of alliteration there.
It is, isn't it? Nicely done. Yeah, if you want to be a coach, you've got to have alliteration across your surname and your forename if you want to get that gig. We're going to be talking All-Ireland final a little bit after 8 o'clock. So let's hear from the Kerry camp then.
Yeah, so as you said, there's only a few days to go until the All-Ireland final, where Kerry will be hoping to make it two in a row. Captain Paul Gainey believes that there are still areas that Kerry can improve in their performance ahead of their clash against Mayo on Sunday. He wants his team to move to the extra level.
Probably so far we've been happy with some aspects of performances, and we're just searching for that you know, extra level now for the next day, and to put in a performance we'd be happy with. So obviously building there all along the way and getting bodies back over the course of the season, and everybody's close enough to know to being fully fit. Obviously been, you know, high competition inside for places, and that's ultimately where you want a high performing unit and a high performing team to be, is pushed all the way, and everybody that gets a jersey on the day then is going to be, you know, ready to perform. So hopefully push on to that next level now.
Ben, you were very taken by John Fogarty's article. John, it's kind of pursuing the different angles here. And essentially, what Mayo can stick up in the dressing room for this weekend?
This is a brilliant piece, and I would encourage people to read if you can, the Examiner. John Fogarty, Mayo's long list of grievances. 10 times they have been written off and dismissed. And it just goes through people who've been talking in the media for, it's about the last like 20 years or so, talking about every time they've basically been slagged. Some of these are like, I didn't think they'd be as harsh. Some of them are actually extremely harsh, and you kind of forget.
I thought particularly harsh at a time when they were very close to Dublin, some of them around 2017.
Then. Yeah.
What's your favourite one?
I was just about to say 2016, Broly. Mayo are celebrity losers. Since 2012, this team has won every game that didn't matter, and none that did. How many chances do they need? Players will give their right arm to have the opportunity once. They are not prepared to give anything. I have no memory of recollection of it being this tough. Obviously, people from Mayo do, because they had to listen to it being said about themselves. I have no memory of it being this harsh. You're reading through a couple of them and you're just like, oh my God.
Lives in Mayo now, so I wonder, has he changed his mind since?
Well, he might have, but like some of these, I don't believe Mayo were unlucky to lose any of the All-Irelands. In fact, I think they were lucky to have lost by so little as they did. Dean Rock's point last year, this is in 2016. Yeah. Dean Rock's point last year was a blessing to Mayo, because they would have been decimated in extra time. Like, some of them are just, when you read them on paper as well, I think they do look way worse. It might be taken a bit of Pat Spillane even a couple of years ago. They talk about Einstein's theory of insanity of doing the same thing over and over again, hoping it would be different. The reason Mayo will never win in All-Ireland is that they don't have the forward power. Well, they might just have it now.
They might just have it this year. Look at that full forward line. Yeah, we shall see. Cara will be with us in about half an hour's time. Let's look forward to that one. And some sad news coming out of Monaghan just before we finish, Eve.
Yeah, so lastly, former Monaghan intercounty footballer Stephen Golligley has died at the age of 41. He won two Ulster titles with his county in 2013 and in 2015. Monaghan GAA released a statement today saying that beyond his many accomplishments, Stephen will be remembered as a gentleman, a loyal clubman and county player, and someone who embodied the very best values of the GAA through his humility, sportsmanship and unwavering commitment.
And may he rest in peace. Carl Dennehy will be with us in just a few moments' time. Of course, prominent athletics writer, talking to us about the national championships this weekend, including Rashid Adeleke, who has had such struggles with her hamstrings so far this summer. So she goes to the nationals this Saturday, hoping to finally post the time to be able to run in the individual 200 metres at the upcoming Europeans in Birmingham. He'll be with us in a sec. Don't forget, the news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. The maximum dosage is a 50 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. You can buy online viagraconnect.ie. It is subject to suitability following consultation with a pharmacist.